This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the family with
Sage.
Alex Brandt Bernard Rasmussen.
Co-host Catherine Brandt.
Tevin Pittman.
And Andy Brandt Bernard.
We're all here. The family's all here. Except for Fawny, of course. Where's Fawn?
She's at school, and I accidentally told our summer nanny that I needed her on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. So we have to figure that out. Text messaging.
You need an AI
Thursday
secretary.
I need a lot of things. But that would be really nice to have an AI secretary.
Speaking of AI, I just read an article about how all of these people are quiet quitting.
But what
they're doing now, it's a whole new thing. It's now it morphed into something else.
Oh.
Now everybody has two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is done with AI.
Yeah.
How are you doing your second job with AI?
They're not.
What? Well, and I mean, it depends on what the job is. Like, you probably pull it off. Yeah.
Figure it out.
Like, if it's like some data entry stuff, like, yeah.
Really?
Or if it's like multiple work from home jobs where it's like.
They were talking about writing marketing materials and all this kind of marketing jobs, especially in AI. The chat, whatever
GPT,
that thing.
Yeah.
GPT.
Right, like, hey, write an ad for such and such.
But they're not
marketing.
Good.
No, they're not
no.
good.
Haven't you played the pizza thing?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, they're not good.
I did not hear it.
It looks and sounds
You have to
not
watch
great.
It.
Well,
yeah,
maybe,
you have to watch
maybe
it more than
some
you.
People are just really good at... Do you program chat GPT?
No.
Do you just tell it what you want?
Yeah, it's a website. It's... a thing that's just Orange. Out there.
I've never tried doing it.
I mean, no matter how well you program AI, it's going to produce something that's written by someone with, like, maybe a 10th grade education.
Yeah, like, remember... No, you probably don't. Smarter Child? It's basically Smarter Child. You're too old. You're too young. Andy and I are right
yeah,
in the...
We did Smarter Child.
It's been
basically it is. It's Smarter Child. And that,
yeah,
that was like 20
child.
Years ago.
And that was
so.
Like... Yeah, it's not like... Everybody's saying that this chat GPT is like amazing and taking over everything. And I'm like, this isn't any better than Smarter Child was.
No.
Like, there's this gal that I follow on Instagram and she talked to the chat GPT and asked her about herself.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, give me some information about
it'll
blah,
just
blah,
like
blah.
Write a bunch of crap that sounds right
yeah,
but
and it's
doesn't
not.
Actually mean anything.
She's like half of it was right.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's the thing is so how ChatGPT works is it was trained. So it's basically it's a computer program.
Sure.
You give it a bunch of information and then you say describe this information and it'll describe it and you'll say either that's right or that's wrong and if it's wrong it'll just try again. And if it's wrong, it'll try again until you say it's right. So that's how it learns
well, that sounds very time-consuming.
It is very time-consuming, and it has to be trained on a lot of different people trained it. So they'd go in and they'd say, like, you know, describe Romeo and Juliet. And they would just say, no, try again until it got it right. The problem is the people who trained it aren't necessarily terribly intelligent. So... when it produces something that's wrong that they don't know is wrong, but it sounds right, they tell it that it is right. So it has a tendency to produce answers that sound right if you don't know what it's talking about, but aren't.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is still right a lot of the time, but it's not like – there's no intelligence behind it.
No.
None at all.
It just uses – it's like a little chat thing that Googles things for you.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this whole article made it sound like this is the reason why bosses should get these people back into the office. Because if they're doing three jobs
people
at the same time and all they have to do is log in by 9:55
well,
and they're
always
good.
People have always half-assed their jobs.
Right. If you could half-ass
I mean,
four or three jobs at once, like, Okay.
Good for you. Well, so if you have one employee that's willing to come in and work hard, that's probably worth three employees. Mm-hmm. So you might as well just weed them out and get a good
employee. I don't know. It depends. Because there's a lot of jobs that they're like, as long as you get your work done, we don't care what you do.
That is true.
Right. Yeah. If you can get 8 hours worth of work done in 4 hours and take a nap the rest of the day.
Yeah. Go for it.
Well, I agree with that 100%. Yeah. If you can get your work done. But you can't be doing a good job if you're running three different jobs in a day.
Well, I suppose it depends on, I could see somebody that does copywriting or stuff like that being able to do a couple different things because, I just have to get this copy out at some point this week.
For mundane tasks that don't require any creativity or thought, really.
Or lots of meetings.
It's
perfect.
Right. If you're like somebody's assistant, you could probably be multiple people's assistant working from home.
Yeah.
Okay. We should have your copywriters start doing some chat GPT copy and see how it turns out.
That'd be great. You should just do a show of purely chat GPT copy.
Of what chat GPT thinks that I should say.
Yeah.
I already have Sage for that. I don't need chat GPT.
That's true. He will correct every word that comes out of your mouth if given a chance.
What should Bop Bop say?
Toodaloo. 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 I should just leave.
Get
Toodaloo,
out.
Bop
He's
Bop.
He's cracking himself up.
You pill. I can't see your eyes, though, Sage. You're sitting too low.
Well, he can't be on this thing anyway, so.
No.
Why not?
Oh. I don't want him on the.
Oh, that. Okay.
Yeah. Well, social media. But this isn't live. This is just. Here, I'll tilt it down so we can. Oh, wait, no.
Anyway,
it's this thing.
There you go. Now we can see Sagey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm working my other job right now.
What's
you
that? What's the other job? She's a copywriter.
I quiet quitted.
Oh, you quiet quitted.
She's quiet quitting this right now.
She's on another podcast.
I'm looking for a ChatGPT extra podcast so I can make no money at those two.
Michael Bryant, Brad Sean Bryant, what's the latest?
We're just trying to represent people who have been injured through no fault of their own. We're trying to talk to them before they talk to an adjuster or before they take a settlement that isn't something they should get based upon their injuries.
How many people are out there in different, not in the law business, that love to run around scaring people before you even get to them?
Well, adjusters will want to settle cases, and they want to close files. So based upon that, they do what they have to. I think there's a lot of circumstances where they probably act as attorneys where they're not attorneys, and they try to explain people's rights, or they give them a certain view that if they look at it. And what I always say is this, if the adjuster really truly thinks the offer they made makes sense, they'd have them come see us.
And that's exactly my question is, you have to understand who has your best interest in mind, correct?
Well, you want to know what your rights are. Whether or not you decide you're going to hire us or not, that's a choice. It's a free consultation, and you want to understand what all your rights are and what coverages you have.
And plus the fact, I hang out with you, so you got to be a good guy if I'm hanging out with you.
Maybe.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Bryant, Bradshaw and Bryant.
Tom here. For years, you've heard me talk about my friends at North American Banking Company. They have great online and mobile banking options, plus friendly employees who are always ready to help. And with their location in Maple Grove now open, it's even more convenient for me and my family. Go visit my friends at any one of their 6 Twin Cities locations or go online to nabankco.com to learn more. Why not bank with my banker? North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. Mike's latest incredible deal is on the Giza Dream Sheets, which you've heard me rave about before, that's for sure. These sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream Sheets at its lowest price ever. These sheets are 60% off, coming in as low as $39.99 with promo code TOM.
We have TJ on the line.
TJ Newman, ladies and gentlemen, her second novel, Drowning, The Rescue of Flight 1421, published, as a matter of fact, just yesterday. So, TJ, how are you?
I'm doing great. I can't believe that was only yesterday. I feel like I've lived three lifetimes since then.
Since May 30th, and it's May 31st today, so that's good. But were they three good lifetimes? That's what I want to know.
You know, it's. I say that because I've just been overwhelmed for the past day of well-wishers from family and friends and complete strangers who've bought and read my book and are my first book and are excited to read my second book. And it's just, it's been a whirlwind in the best, most overwhelming way possible.
I bet.
I could see that. And then it doesn't hurt to have people like James Patterson say it's the first terrific thriller of 2023. He might know what a good thriller is. You know what I'm saying?
I do, and up comes that word surreal again, because to have James Patterson say something like that about a book he wrote is, well, it's a thriller writer's dream come true.
Oh, I'm just reading through your bio here with the little bit of what your book is about. It sounds terrifying. I have to say,
like the book or
it's kind of
bio?
Like my worst nightmare is what your book is about.
What's your worst nightmare?
You know, that's kind of the gig as a thriller writer, right?
It's yeah, like, well, you did a good job.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, Would you like to explain what your book is about so that people know
so that everybody knows what horrors you speak of? Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
My book that came out yesterday is called Drowning, The Rescue of Flight 1421. And it tells the story of a plane that goes down in the ocean 6 minutes after takeoff. The passengers immediately evacuate until an explosion forces those who didn't get out in time to close the doors. But too late, plane floods and sinks, with 12 people trapped inside, including the father and his 11-year-old daughter. And now their only hope at survival lies with an elite rescue team on the surface led by her mother and his soon-to-be ex-wife. And while the setup of that is, yes, it's scary, it's intense, and I won't sugarcoat it, it is. It's a real ride. That's just the setup, right? The story is actually about that family, that fractured family that's trying to come back together. It's about the lives of the 12 people who are inside that plane. It's a story of hope and love and resilience as the rescuers up above and the passengers down below work together in the race against time and impossible odds to save lives and bring that fractured family back together again.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it does indeed. I know. I do have to ask you a couple of questions. And I want to tell you one quick story, if that's all right. That work for you, TJ?
Yeah. Absolutely. Story time.
Can you, because it doesn't say in the article, and if you don't want to tell me, you don't have to tell me, but can you tell us, did you just work for one airline as a flight attendant? Did you work, where did you work?
I worked for 10 years at Virgin America, and yes, one airline, but with an asterisk. So I started with Virgin America, but along the way we were bought by Alaska. So through that acquisition, it transitioned into Alaska. So I started with Virgin, ended with Alaska, and I flew for 10 years, all 10 of which were out of LAX. And we call it the family business. My mom is a flight attendant. My sister is a flight attendant. And It's a job in an industry I love so much that I wrote two books that are essentially love letters to aviation and to the job of flight attendants and pilots.
So I take it you've never been trapped in an airplane underwater.
It's not a memoir.
Okay.
Not a memoir.
All right. Just checking.
But
I actually just met someone recently, and I was being introduced, and the person that was introducing me said, you know, oh, she just wrote a book. It's coming out in a few weeks. You know, it's called Drowning, and, you know, there's this whole thing. And the person looks at me and goes, is it a memoir? I looked at them, and I went, it's titled Drowning. I hope not.
Not Almost Drowned.
Almost Drowning. There you go.
There are two real Flight 1421s, though.
Really?
Southwest and American Airlines.
They have 1421.
So,
is that where you?
I wonder if they're going to see reduced ticket sales.
Oh,
way to go, TJ! You ruined their business.
I didn't know that. Where are the routes?
Let's see. American Airlines looks like Albuquerque to Dallas and Birmingham to Charlotte.
Oh, I'll probably never take those.
No water on. Yeah, no water.
No, yeah, that's true. There's not a lot of water there. Uh-oh, Southwest Honolulu to Oakland.
TJ, you've cursed them.
Are you serious? Really? That is
lot of water there.
The flight in the book is Honolulu, San Francisco.
Oh, uh-oh. Well.
No.
This is this sounds very predictory.
TJ.
Uh-oh.
I literally just picked four random numbers. And the interesting thing was, so there's my backstory is that one of the things I speak most about is that I'm here talking to you guys in the victory lap, right? I'm a New York Times bestseller. This is my second book. I've got movie deals. It's like the victory lap. But my origin is anything but. I got a degree in musical theater, and I moved to New York, and I tried to make it on the Great White Way. And since we're not having a conversation about my next Broadway show, you can assume how well that went.
You and 20 so I million left New other York people.
And exactly. Yep, I was one of them. And so I left New York and I moved back home to Phoenix, which is where I'm from. And I moved in with my parents and I did the whole, 20-something living in their parents' house again, with a degree in musical theater, and the whole musical theater community just told me I wasn't good enough. Like, what am I going to do now? And I got a job at the local indie bookstore up the street. And that's when I started dreaming again, right? Like, that's when I started giving myself permission to get back to my creative roots in a way that was a little less out there, a little less public of, I'm going to go follow my dreams on Broadway. So I started writing at night, something I've always done my whole life, but I kind of put down while I was in New York. So I start writing stories at night in secret. I don't tell anybody. And my time at the bookstore was when my dream of becoming a published author really became a concrete goal. Like, I used to, when I would shelve books by authors with the last name Newman, which is my last name, I would take my thumb and I would cover up their first name and I would pretend that I was shelving my own book.
Oh, you willed it to happen.
And that's where... Exactly. And when I left the store to be a flight attendant, because, like I said, the opportunity came up, it's a family business, I knew I had to take it. It was at work that I had the idea for my first book. And so I started writing that first book in the forward galley, and I would write by hand on red eyes while the passengers were asleep. And I would write, on the back of the passenger manifest, the back of a catering bill, and just cobbled together a book flight after flight after flight. And then when I started looking for an agent, because that's what, my Google told me of what I needed to do if I wanted to get a book published, because I didn't know anybody in publishing. I didn't know what I was doing. I literally bought a book called The Essential Guide to Getting Your Book Published, and I just read it and followed the instructions. And step one was get an agent. So I sent my manuscript to 41 agents, all of whom rejected me and said no thank you. And the 42nd agent was my one and only yes. Wow. And that book, that manuscript that I sent, debuted at number 2 on the New York Times bestseller list. I tell that whole story just to say, he was the 42nd, which is kind of like a magical number to me now because of that. And only last week, someone wrote to me and said, I love that you put sort of a tribute to your 42nd agent in the title of the book, Flight 1421. And I was like a light bulb went up over my head. I was like, I did not do that on purpose. That literally, I just randomly chose numbers that sounded good, because I think it was 7, 14, 21, 28. Like, it just worked for me. And now you're bringing in this whole new wrinkle to the flight number.
Way to go, Catherine.
No, that was Andy.
No, it was right. Yeah, it was Andy.
Well, you should go play roulette.
Yeah.
With those That's numbers.
It. 42.
Yeah.
Right? 42 black. Here we go.
Put it all on there.
42 black. Here we go. TJ, very quickly, I just want to tell you a very quick story about, I'm reading all the information on you. And about 20 years ago, I was down in, there's a place, the Breakers Hotel. You know where that is down in Florida, right, TJ?
I believe I do, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, they've got a community that's just west of there by about 10, 11 miles. It's called Breakers West, okay? Mm-hmm. And they have a couple of golf courses in there. It's really, really a nice complex and all the rest of it. So one day, 20 years ago, I walk out and I got, you know, I'm not playing with anybody. I'm by myself. And they said, well, we'll just team you up with another guy. He's by himself. So we go out there and we introduce one another, just first names. And we play a round of golf. About 4 hours later, and the guy was the nicest man, just very pleasant. If you hit a good shot, he'd be all praising you about your good shot. And we had a wonderful time. I just had a great time the entire 4 hours. Then it was time to, you know, the round was over. We separated, and I said, hey, great playing with you. Really, really nice, and I hope to play with you again sometime. And he left, and as I'm walking out the front door of the country club, this person comes up and goes, I didn't know you knew him. And I said, what are you talking about? They said, well, you know who that is? And I said, no. He said, that's James Patterson. I played four hours of golf with James Patterson, never even knew it was James Patterson. He's just a great guy.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful to hear. It's so nice when people whose, you know, careers you respect and admire and people that you seen from afar, when you actually meet them in person and they're lovely, it's so validating to the rest of the image that you have of them.
Didn't we have him on this show about a children's book that he wrote?
Yeah, we did. And I told him about playing golf with him. And he was just, honest to God, TJ, he was just this very nice, very pleasant man. So the first review of your book, I see the first terrific thriller of 2023, James Patterson. I'm like, man, this must be a great book if James loves it.
And he didn't pull the don't you know who I am.
Don't you know who I am. Yeah, that'd be
big. Go rake my trap over there for me.
That is actually, I don't James remember Patterson. The guy's name, but one other time I played golf with a guy. This was about probably 25 years ago. It was not at Breakers West. It was a different place. His name sounded very familiar to me, and I cannot remember his name. But I found out basically a couple of days later that he was in jail, arrested for murder, that he had murdered someone a few days earlier and then played golf with me.
Good.
So that was a real thrill too, TJ.
How nice.
You on the golf course is a very interesting pairing.
Yeah. Really. You should do a reality show about you on the golf course.
We should. Hey, let's go play golf with Tom. You could either write several bestsellers or kill someone. It'd be great. It'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
But in any case, let me ask you a question, because it always seems to me writing a book is very, very hard work, isn't it? Or are you just so tremendously talented you don't even notice? Is that the plan?
Say yes.
Absolutely.
I can't even lie and pretend to say yes. No,
dashed it off in an hour.
It's tough. It is tough work. It's tough work. And you know, some of the toughest part of that is getting out of your own way. You know, my first book was tremendously successful, and there's pressure and expectations with the follow-up. And you know, I put a lot of pressure and expectations on myself because people really came out and supported me on my first book, and they were entertained, and they let me know it. They let me know how much they liked that book and how much they appreciate it and how excited they were for the next one. And I'll tell you what, when you buy a book and take the time to read it, that is a gift that you are giving to that author that I do not take lightly or take for granted. I mean, to give someone the privilege of your time and attention is the most valuable resource you have. And I was so aware of how grateful I was to my readers that I really wanted to write another good book for them. I wanted to reward that with another good story.
Mm-hmm.
And the pressure was intense at first, but I finally just had to get out of my own way and discipline myself and say, this isn't about you. This is about them. This is about this story, and this is about your readers. So your ego and your fears and whatever you have going on, it is not nearly as important as your readers and this story that you need to tell. So get your priorities in mind. And that was the only way that I could really, you know, sit down and write the story that I needed to write. And I'm exceptionally proud of the book and the story that I was able to tell. And I really rooted for these characters, and I really love these characters. And so far, the reviews have been very, very excitingly fantastic, and I'm so grateful for that.
That is terrific. Now, let's go back to the very beginning. So you're a flight attendant. What inspired you to write that first book? Do you remember?
Oh, do I ever remember? I was working a red eye from L.A. to JFK. That's my route. That was what I did the most. And I was standing at the front of the cabin, and I'm looking out into the plane. It's dark. It's cold. Everyone's asleep. It's quiet. It's a red eye. And I have this thought that their lives, and my life, and my crewmates' lives, and all of our lives are in the hands of the pilot, which is not revolutionary. I mean, yeah, they're flying the plane. That's fairly obvious. But it was the first time that I thought of the flip side of that, which is that with that much power and responsibility, how vulnerable does that make the pilot? And I couldn't shake the thought. And a few days later, I was working a different trip with a different set of pilots. And one day, I just said to the captain, I said, hey, what would you do if, I don't know, what, your family was taken and you were told that if you didn't crash the plane, they would be killed? What would you do?
Ooh. Wow. Dark and thoughts.
It's a thriller, not a rom-com. Right. You know, not a romance. It's a thriller. The look on his face when I asked him that question, it terrified me. Because I realized that he didn't have an answer, and I could tell that terrified him.
Yeah.
And that was the moment that I knew I had the makings of my first book.
And obviously, like, working as a flight attendant for 10 years, you're going to meet – it's like – almost like being a bartender or hairdresser where people are going to maybe you're going to overhear things that people wouldn't normally tell just an everyday person. Was there like any families or passengers that stood out as inspiration for the characters in your book?
You know, it's, I always call the job of flight attendant as being a professional people watcher because that's just what we do. We've got 100 some strangers that we've never met before on every single flight. And we are trained to be situationally aware and trained to be reading them. We're trained to look at, you know, ooh, this man looks like he could be sick. Is this going to snowball into a medical emergency once we're at altitude? Does this woman appear to be intoxicated? Why is that man crying? What's going on there? Like, we're constantly aware of what's going on around us with these people and trying to figure out how to mitigate a crisis or avoid a crisis. Essentially, that's the whole point. And I look back now and I go, well, that's just character study. I'm just observing human behavior, which is nothing but character study of who is this person? What's their backstory? Yeah. What's their deal? What are they about? And that's the job of a writer, is coming up with backstories and rich personal lives for people that you don't know. And so I think 10 years of being exposed to hundreds of strangers every single day really, you know, lent myself to that being the inspiration for all these characters and all the worlds. Both of my books are large ensemble cast of characters who, you know, in my first book, I describe it as the bell curve of society. When you're on a plane, it's come one, come all. You know, it's you're going to get a little bit of everything. And so I'm fascinated by that idea of who are these people? And if something goes sideways, what personalities are going to come out? What are these people going to be like? And that's, you know, both my books are the theme of ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances on the worst day of their lives.
God, what a story that is. Now, I do need to mention something, ladies and gentlemen. If you're going to get TJ's autograph on your book, you better get in line because apparently Falling, TJ's first book, is being made into a major motion picture.
Look at you.
Big shot.
Fancy.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Falling, Universal and Working Title are going to be making Falling, which is incredible. And actually, Drowning has a movie deal as well. Warner Brothers is going to be making Drowning. So both my books have movie deals, which is just, I mean, let's recall it to the top. That word's surreal. Like, I don't have a better word to describe it other than that.
That's amazing. I mean, it's rare that somebody with just two books out has optioned both of them. Right. And, yeah.
And how involved cool. are yeah, you cool. in the like development of the movie process? Are they just kind of taking your book and doing their own thing, or do you get to kind of sit in on any of the production meetings?
Well, for Drowning, I am an executive producer, which is pretty Ooh. Cool. And then with Falling, I'm actually adapting it. I'm actually writing the screenplay for Falling.
Wow.
Oh, you know what? You should put a scene in there where James Patterson's playing golf with this morning show guy. Now we're talking.
You could get involved.
As she was talking, Tom, I was thinking about you, how you notice everything about everybody everywhere you go. Look mm-hmm. at that guy over there, the way he's wearing his hat. Look at that guy over there, he's chewing his food. Look at yeah. that guy over there, he's doing... I'm like, what? Who are these people? I don't
what
even notice anything.
About?
You, like, notice every minute thing about people.
So what's your point?
I'm just saying, you could be an author.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
If you could ever just
Except
sit down.
Every book would be very negative. That's the problem.
Well, I think there's probably a market for that.
Yeah, there might be. That's true. That's probably true. But that, TJ, it's so great to hear that, now, how many years ago did that day occur to you on that day that, hey, I'm going to start writing books? How many years ago was that you thought about writing Falling?
You know, I wish I would have wrote down the exact date that I had that conversation and that I started working on it, because I honestly don't know. My first book, I was working as a full-time flight attendant the whole time, and I wrote that over a long period of time because, like I said, sometimes all I had was 5 minutes. Sometimes I had, you know, 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It really just depended, and I wrote that book over a long period of time, but 2017 to 2019 was a period of time where it was like, okay, if I'm gonna actually make this thing happen, I need to make this thing happen. And that's when I really buckled down and got that book into the shape that it needed to be in to send out. And November of 2019 is when I started working with my agent, and we started getting the book ready to go and doing all that. And then the pandemic hit, which kind of threw a cog into pretty much a wrench into the cause of pretty much all of everything, you know, that all of us did. But I spent most of the pandemic working on Falling, my first book, and then it came out in July of 2021, and now May of 2023 is my follow-up.
That is so amazing, though, TJ. You look back 5 years, and did you realize, I mean, my God, 5 years later, you have not one but two best-selling books. You got a couple of movies coming out. It's a pretty good five-year period. You kind of took advantage of the pandemic there, didn't you?
You know, Churchill, he's got one of my favorite quotes, never waste a good crisis. Right?
Very good.
Never waste a good crisis. And that was a crisis that, you know, we all sort of had to step back and go, this is bigger than me. And it felt like, you know what? The best thing I can do to actually help my fellow neighbor is to stay out of the fray. So me staying in my house and writing a book actually felt like a responsible thing to do in that. So it, in a weird way, almost gave me kind of some purpose to be doing that during the pandemic, because it was like, well, at least I'm, you know, I'm sort of doing my part to not kind of make it any worse than not, you know, being a bigger tax on the medical system. So... But yeah, that's what I did. That's how I distracted myself and kept myself busy during the pandemic.
Geez, all I ever did was learn how to make a good martini.
Right, and some sourdough bread. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? One would consider that skill on par and important.
I certainly did during the pandemic.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, even just your journey of how you got to the point where you're writing a book is a very successful story. I mean, you go from getting rejected on Broadway, which was your, I'm assuming at that point, your lifelong dream, and then to now turn that into a whole new career that's kind of in the same entertainment vein. Now you're writing mm-hmm. movies. Like, it's a very much so a success story.
Yeah, I'm a storyteller. I've known since day one of being on this planet. That's what I do. My brain just is hardwired that way, and I'm going to be surrounded by stories and telling stories and coming up with stories, and that's just what I've pursued my whole life, and I think that initial go in New York with so much, you know, pushback and rejection and such a headwind, I'm not sure I'd be where I am now without that initial thickening of the skin, if you will.
No, I think it's a good way to put it, thickening of the skin. You have a great story, TJ. Now you're still living in Phoenix, which it's much nicer there in the winter than it is in Minnesota. I'd like to point that out.
You know what? I went to college in Central Illinois. I'm a native of Phoenix, Arizona, and then I went to college in Central Illinois and discovered what you guys, that whole winter thing with the white stuff that comes down from the sky. And it was a culture shock, to be sure. The first time I ever shoveled a driveway, I can remember being like, are people okay that, like, do this all the time? Like, is everyone okay? But then you come to Phoenix in the middle of July, and you have the exact same question for us. Yeah. You'll say, are you okay? Why are you here? This is torture. This is a cry for help. What's wrong with you?
A little toasty?
A little toasty. It's hot in an oven.
Yes, it is hot in an oven. Well, one of these days you're going to have to go on tour around the country and sell some books, and you have to come into studio. It'd be great to have you in studio.
I would love that. And I'm actually in the middle. I'm on the first day of my tour. I'm in L.A. as we speak, and I'm doing a 12-city tour all around the country.
You coming anywhere near us in Minneapolis, St. Paul?
Chicago's the closest I'm going to get.
It's only a 7-hour drive.
Yeah, it's not that big a deal. No, the only reason I ask you that, TJ, is Minnesota is known and has been for many, many, many years to be the most voracious readers in the country. Minnesotans love to read books.
Long, dark winters will.
Yep. Yeah, long, dark winters will do that.
Turn people into readers.
That's true.
Yeah. I know that, and I know you have a thriving art community. You're theater and your art in Minneapolis. I know it is thrive. It's really a sleeper city that most people don't know has this huge cultural epicenter to it, but you really do. There's really incredible theater and incredible museums in Minneapolis. It's true.
It is wonderful. TJ, we look forward to seeing you someday and talking to you again soon. Congratulations on the new book. Drowning, her second novel, of course, Falling. We're going to have, I'm going to have to set aside to shoot that golf scene with James Patterson, but other than that.
I'll let you know. We can coordinate specials.
All right. Sounds, TJ, thanks for your enthusiasm. That was really good fake enthusiasm, by the way, that you just did there.
Yeah, it's her acting background.
Right? Yeah. It's her acting background. Gee, Tom, that'd be great. I got to go now. Goodbye. TJ, come back soon. Love talking to you.
Likewise. Thank you guys so much for having me on. This is really fun.
Oh, no question about it. Ladies and gentlemen, TJ Newman, and the book is called Drowning.
Michael Bryant, Brad Sean Bryant, what's the latest?
We're just trying to represent people who've been injured through no fault of their own. We're trying to talk to them before they talk to an adjuster or before they take a settlement that isn't something they should get based upon their injuries.
How many people are out there in different, not in the law business, that love to run around scaring people before you even get to them?
Well, adjusters will want to settle cases, and they want to close files. So based upon that, they do what they have to. I think there's a lot of circumstances where they probably act as attorneys where they're not attorneys, and they try to explain people's rights, or they give them a certain view that if they look at it. And what I always say is this: if the adjuster really truly thinks the offer they made makes sense, they'd have them come see us, you know.
And that's exactly my question, is you have to understand who has the best, your best interest in mind, correct?
Well, you want to know what your rights are. You know, whether or not you decide you're going to hire us or not, that's a choice. It's a free consultation, and you want to understand what all your rights are and what coverages you have.
And plus the fact, I hang out with you, so you got to be a good guy if I'm hanging out with you.
Maybe.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Bryant, Bradshaw and Bryant.
Tom here. For years, you've heard me talk about my friends at North American Banking Company. They have great online and mobile banking options, plus friendly employees who are always ready to help. And with their location in Maple Grove now open, it's even more convenient for me and my family. Go visit my friends at any one of their 6 Twin Cities locations or go online to nabankco.com to learn more. Why not bank with my banker? North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.
You all have helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today and have trusted in Mike Lindell to give you a great night's sleep. Mike's latest incredible deal is on the Giza Dream Sheets, which you've heard me rave about before, that's for sure. These sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. Right now, the Giza Dream Sheets at its lowest price ever. These sheets are 60% off, coming in as low as $39.99 with promo code TOM.
You know what the average high in July in Phoenix is? Oh.
110.
106.
Oh, God.
I've actually been, average. I've been to Phoenix in the summertime, and
it's not fun.
It's really weird because you don't, you know, you just don't think of the smallest things, like opening up your car door.
Yeah, they have to use ovens.
Burning your hand off
to open their car doors. You have to roll down your windows, or all the windows will explode because it'll get so hot in the car.
That I did not know. Yeah. Or sitting down on a bench.
Oh, a metal bench or something.
Any bench. What, like,
just a bench.
Yeah.
But outdoor play equipment.
Yeah. Forget it.
Oh, yeah. If you thought the metal slides here.
It has to be in the shade.
It's nothing.
I was out. I was visiting my parents with my brother Terry, and we were staying in the same hotel, and we got back, I don't know, around 11 after seeing my parents, and we decided to go to the bar and have a drink, and we'll go outside. It'll be so beautiful. It was just as hot at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
As it is at noon.
Yeah,
it doesn't
average low
go down.
Is
it doesn't
cool.
Like, no. It doesn't pull up at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Which, that's how it's been here the last 3 days.
Right. No, when I lived in Arizona, I remember there was one afternoon. I was like, I'll go for a run. Like, it's hot, but it can't be that.
Talk about
I
made the
it,
afternoon.
I made it like a block, and I turned around. I was like, I'm going back in the house and eating some ice cream.
How did people live there before air conditioning?
I have.
Like, how?
Well, you know what? The population was pretty low.
Yeah,
it was had to be low
because they all died of heat stroke.
Yeah, northern Arizona isn't nearly as
Flagstaff
horrible.
Flagstaff is actually pretty nice.
Yeah,
because it's higher elevation.
Yeah. But Phoenix itself, it's just really
it's a
hot
hellscape.
There. Yeah, and also Tucson, that was kind of more of a settled area because that's got some elevation, even though it's south. It's not nearly as hot as Phoenix itself is very hot.
No, 1950 they had 107,000 people. That was before air conditioning.
It's not that.
It was 107,000 miserable people.
Well, people that just sat in front of
a
fan.
They probably sat around and bitched about the heat all summer.
They did the ice cube in front of the fan thing. The big frozen cube.
I wonder what the average high is. Let's see.
All those adobe houses and things, you know.
In February.
Yeah. They stay cool.
Average high in February is 71, which
I hate when people say that. It's a dry heat. Okay, go stick your head in the oven. It's still like it's hot.
Yeah,
it's still hot.
It's still really hot.
It's a dry heat.
When my parents were living in Phoenix full time, my mom would get up at 6:30 in the morning to water her flowers and go out golfing before you had to be home by 10.
Or else you'd start to
because that's when it
it's just terrible after.
The other Andy in the chat, his friend moved away from Phoenix when he saw something. What do you suppose that thing is?
A lizard or a snake?
No, it's related to the heat.
Oh.
His garbage can began to melt.
Okay.
A garbage can?
Plastic garbage can.
Well, if it's sitting out on the black tar.
Yeah, if it's sitting on... I can't even imagine how hot the black top must get.
I can't even.
It's probably almost 200 degrees.
Your tires could melt, couldn't they?
Well, they're rubber, so maybe...
Yeah, and everything is inconvenient. Because then, now if you have to go walk your dog or something like that, you have to think of every little... Yeah.
Before the sun comes up.
Yeah.
You don't live in a
shady
neighborhood.
Sorry,
forget
spot.
It. I would live my life in the nighttime.
Yeah, exactly.
And sleep
nocturnal.
During the day.
Yeah.
Because then when the sun's not out again.
You get up to 160 degrees in the summer.
It is.
160, it's pretty hot. That'd probably
hot.
Melt a plastic garbage can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a couple of headlines I want to read to you, and you can guess what it's all about. What?
I had another short one.
Oh, go ahead.
Another old guy's having a kid.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up
to
you.
Hey!
Who? On that? Yep.
Well, Dad, take it away, Dad.
Somebody's having a child.
Mick Jagger?
Somebody older than Mick Jagger. Or about
Ernest Borgnine.
Ernest Borgnine might be dead.
He died 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, speaking of Mick Jagger, the guy that you're mentioning, the girl that is having his baby used to date Mick Jagger. Fun fact.
And she's how old?
She likes old Richmond.
29.
She's 29.
29.
Yeah. Mm. She likes old Richmond.
She has a type.
Ernest Borgnine died 11 years ago.
Okay. 11 years ago?
It's been a while.
Goodness.
You know, the last time I talked to him, I was doing an interview with him on the KQ morning show.
Yeah.
And he leans into the microphone. So, I'm sitting in Studio A, so I'm not in Studio B. Mm-hmm. And he leans in the microphone and goes, "Tommy, I just farted."
Okay.
Like, what?
Congratulations.
Why would you tell me that?
Well, it's a morning show, so yeah, you know, a lot of morning shows, that's
kind of the thing.
Apparently people knew that he had farted in Studio B. Let me put it that way. So
gross.
He looks like a farter.
83 years old, about to be a dad. 83 years old, 29-year-old mom.
Girlfriend.
Al Pacino.
Mm-hmm. And he looks rough.
He looks like 110.
He also seems like he's insane. So.
And he is.
He is nuts.
He looks like he's bananas.
So does this woman has a have a legal right to all the money? Because that's the only way I can.
Yeah. They're not married.
That's the only fantasy I could think she could come up with.
Yeah, they're not married.
To hang with that
guy. Is this her first child?
It says this will be the fourth child for the actor, the first for 29-year-old Noor Al-Fallah.
Noor Al-Fallah. Yeah.
Definitely need to Google search her.
Oh, here we go. He's going to Google.
Let's see. Yeah, she's an actor slash model, right?
It would be me dating a 86-year-old.
Yes.
No, more than that. She's only 29.
She's 29 and he's 82, I think.
83.
Oh, the thing I saw this morning,
so you're 34.
I'm 34.
So it'd be 5 years. So it'd be an 88-year-old.
88-year-old.
Yeah.
That's like weird.
Not good.
I know where you can find a whole bunch of 88-year-olds.
Speaking of Arizona.
Yeah.
Pacino and Al-Fallah have been linked together for about a year when they were spotted at a dinner together. Though Page Six talked to Scores at the time, who said that they started quietly dating earlier in the pandemic.
I mean, how does that end up being?
Right. Who set them up?
Yeah.
They don't hang out at the same places. Like, she didn't just bump into him out at the club or, like, somebody.
And she could probably date, like, most anybody.
Right.
And she chooses an 83-year-old man.
Who looks terrible.
He's got a ton of money. He's going to die soon.
Yeah, it's all about that.
Yeah.
It's
I mean, I feel like the moment he'd take his shirt off, I'd be like, I'm out. Not for me.
Yeah.
I changed my mind. It's not worth it.
Nope. Like I said, she's thinking dollar signs,
I just,
he probably owns several homes that he bought, you know, 50 years ago for $3 million, and now they're worth $50 billion, and I'm sure a lot.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's a lot.
Let's see.
But, I mean, she could probably date a
she's young. She's probably feeding him all kinds of cholesterol.
She could be dating a young, good-looking actor.
100-something million.
Yeah.
100 million?
I just couldn't do it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I couldn't do it.
Because, like, and especially, like, in today, there's so many, like, wealthy young people. Like, she doesn't need to find some old man to leave her some money.
Yeah, but they're all insufferable California types, so.
I suppose.
I don't know.
But they're better to look at, which is worth a lot.
Yeah, there you go. Are they? Are they actually?
Better to look at? Yes.
Got a bunch
absolutely.
Of tattoos and piercings and obnoxious glasses.
Have you seen Al Pacino?
Please Google Al Pacino.
Something like that. God, there's some stories in the news this morning. Where do we know the name Tara Reid from? Was she an actor?
Tara Reid was in...
yeah, she's an actress.
What the hell was she in?
She was
in Sharknado, I think.
Sharknado.
She was in a bunch of weird... Wasn't she in the Scream movies?
Wait, is that the...
Am I thinking
that's not,
of Tara Reid? I'm thinking
no,
of
that's a
maybe
different...
Maybe I'm thinking of
something. Oh, this is a different
Tara Reid. Yeah.
Tara Reid was in American Pie, The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yes, American Pie.
Bunch of stuff I've never seen.
So this is a different person you're saying, Tevin?
Yeah, I know who you're thinking of. That was in like the...
Yes, another blonde
right.
What
90s
movie
actress. Scream, the Scream movie.
Yeah, movie. Or Scary Movie. That's what you...
Scary Movie?
Yeah, she was... I know who you're talking about.
Oh, yes, I'm thinking of Scary Movie.
Okay, Scary Movie.
I'm glad that we could figure that out as a team.
The Scary Movie cast.
It's Balthazar Bethel Thompson all over again. You're thinking of Anna Faris.
Anna Faris, yeah.
Oh, I mean, potato, potato.
Who was the
blonde, middle-aged white woman?
Yeah. And then there's another one, too. There's a third.
Well, there's a Tara Reid who accused Joe Biden of sexual assault. So that's
and she went to, that's didn't she just go
is that
back
the
to
same
London?
One?
No, she moved to Russia.
Russia, that, there we go. Russia.
She moved to Russia to get away from him, I guess.
Tara Reid was in Sharknado, I was right.
But that's a different Tara Reid.
I didn't.
I no.
Oh,
I,
this yeah, is that's not the no. It's Biden the same one.
It's think. The same woman.
Are you sure?
No, because I saw a picture of the Biden one, and she was
no,
a brunette.
No, Tara Reid.
Oh, the one you're talking.
This one
oh no,
the,
this is it's spelled different.
It's a oh, former okay. Senate aide.
Oh, different one. Not in Sharknado
or Scary Movie.
Not in Sharknado. Different one completely.
I'm
or
leaning
Scream.
Toward he's guilty. You know why I'm leaning toward he's guilty?
Why is that?
Because he said, and I quote, "I never digitally penetrated her." Now that's
very specific
out.
Denial.
Yeah, it really is a
digitally
very specific denial.
Penetrated her. How do you
be a finger? Right. How about
how do you do
like,
that?
Really,
a robot?
Okay, so that means I have to watch what I say because Sagey just got back.
Yeah, watch what you say.
Cover your ears.
But that means the leading two candidates running for president right now, one's the president, one's a former president. They've both been accused of sexual assault.
Yeah.
Yep, sure
we
have.
Need to raise that's, our standards as a
say,
country.
The bar
do.
Is
yes.
low.
The bar
why
is so
are we
low.
Doing? Why is this it's, happening?
I don't know. And the one, I mean,
okay. So the one that we're talking about played Vicky in the films American Pie, American Pie 2, American.
That's
Reunion.
A different, yeah,
that's
a different Tara Reid.
That's a different Tara Reid.
Well, that's the one that we're talking about.
No, we're talking about the one that Mr. Biden
oh,
may or may
okay.
not have.
The Biden one is spelled like the verb read, but with an E at the end of it.
Yes.
Whereas oh, the actress is it's
R-E-I-D.
Like ride.
Yeah.
It should be pronounced ride, assuming she's
R-E-I-D.
Of German heritage. Nope, she's mainly Irish and a whole bunch of other crap. But
Irish and a whole bunch of other crap.
Scottish, Italian, okay. French, Hungarian, and English.
I wonder if
a bunch of other crap.
Because it you is. Have to have an ego so massive to run for president in the first place. Is that behavior kind of like, I'm so special, I can do whatever I want?
Oh, 100%.
I think it is.
And then because, right. too, it's like, if and when they get caught, rather than like doing any type of damage control or anything, they point at the other candidate and be like,
yeah.
well, I might have be accused of this, but it's not as bad as what they're doing over
I
here.
Know.
It's like, no,
it's
you,
like
we
it's
can.
Horrible.
Yes.
How about we get a decent person to be president of the United States? Do we have
I
any
don't
decent
think
people?
You can do that.
It's not no. going to happen.
I just don't think so.
I think you're probably right. These people, I mean, everybody I look at now, it's like you arrogant, filthy turd-ish.
Yeah, and then I think you get a lot of decent people that just get put off to the idea of doing it because they're
yeah.
like, it's
yep.
just such a scum fest that I can't, I don't want to be associated with
I
it.
I like yep. scum fest. Now we're talking.
Well,
it is a scum fest.
What is the likelihood of, well, because it's going to be either potentially Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump, right? Those are like the two front
no
runners
idea.
For the Republicans.
It's still a long way off.
But yeah, it's,
and both,
we got a while.
No, thank you.
Well, what about Biden? You going to vote for him?
All of them, no, thank you.
Okay,
but
that's where I am.
Right.
All
I don't
of
know
them,
if
no
Biden's going to run again.
I hope not.
He's
he
too
said
old.
He said he is.
He's too old.
He's way too old.
What do you mean? He's only 10 years older than somebody I know.
Yeah, 10 years old.
10 years.
10 years makes a big difference.
Yeah. Do you want to be president in 10
especially
years?
Especially for president.
Right.
Like being, yeah.
Sage, let me ask you a question. Do you think I'm too old to be in kindergarten?
Big nods, yes.
The
big nod.
I like he thought about it at first.
Like,
I
added, well,
could I sneak
like,
you in?
Let me think about it. Let me think.
It'd be like that Adam Sandler movie.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Madison. Yeah,
Billy Madison,
yep.
It's just... What's high school like? Stay here.
Yeah.
Hey. Wait, well, hold on. I can't hear you. What? I'm too little to be in first grade?
No. I'm too little to be in first grade.
Are you?
You're not too
I don't
little.
Think that's true.
You're going into first grade.
You're not too
He's going
little.
Into kindergarten.
Next year.
Oh, he is?
He's going into kindergarten.
He's going to be the year after
in
the year.
Fall.
Some people go into first grade when they're five.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. He's asking me more questions.
No.
What?
Yeah.
Nope.
No, that, to, I don't no. think that's accurate.
You have to be six. You have
Am
to be...
too little?
Because you legally don't
you
have
can't...
to go to
yeah.
kindergarten.
I'm too little.
Really?
I think you have to go to kindergarten, but not preschool.
Yeah.
Sage,
you
said,
don't have to go to preschool. I don't think in some states you have to go to kindergarten, but I don't think in Minnesota you have
yeah.
to legally
oh, okay.
go to kindergarten.
Yeah.
But you can't start kindergarten until you're five, and then you turn six in kindergarten, so you have to be six to start first grade. I don't think you can be five and start first grade.
Sage, you just told me I'm too little to be in kindergarten.
Too little to be in kindergarten?
First grade, you have to be 6 years old on or before September 1st.
Yeah, that's the cutoff. Like, Dan's birthday was September 4th, and so he was like...
So he's like a full year older than all of his friends.
Fawn has two girls in her class that are over a year apart because they both have middle August birthdays. Mm. And that's like the... And Fawn could technically be graduating from kindergarten this year. She could have stayed because of her birthday because it's like mid-May to September 1st is kind of the...
The gray zone.
Gray zone of, I guess you could start whenever.
So when you're making the decision of like, do we send her now or do we wait for like a year so can she be older? Did you want to wait and like have her be the smartest?
It was really tough. It was really tough for her. It was hard because she's really small for her age.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, she'll either be the smallest person in her class and the one of the younger people in her class, or she could be kind of similar sized and be older and be, like really smart and advanced and stuff. But her preschool teacher was like, send her. She's ready. She'll be super bored if she stays in preschool another year. And then he loves school more than anyone I've ever met in my life. And his teachers have said that he's been bored in preschool for the last 6 months. Hmm. So I'm like, well, I guess we're starting them both in five.
I have a question. They don't do a whole lot.
They're preschool. They have, there's playtime and stuff, but then there is structured stuff that they do as well. It's not like
just finger daycare. Painting
and, not like it was like when we were kids.
Yeah, like daycare preschool can be different than like school preschool.
When I was in kindergarten, I had half days. The greatest thing ever. Just like walking
Fawn
out.
Fawn started in half days at kindergarten. Their school has half days, which doesn't really happen anymore.
Yeah, I remember the last week we would have to like learn how to go through the lunch line because we never ate lunch.
Oh,
like that was part of our like curriculum.
Yeah, Fawn did half days the first half of the year and then full days the second half of the year because I was like, you need to be, your stamina needs to be built up for first grade.
Okay, I have a question.
Oh, okay.
Very quick question.
Okay.
Okay. I started school when I was 4 years old, and I started first grade when I was 5 years old.
See, you snuck in under
don't do that
some
anymore.
That's because twins went in 60s.
Right.
Begged.
Get rid of me. Begged. Get them out of the house.
Get this maniac.
That was some weird
here.
50s.
Out.
Nobody cares.
Right. Yep. They rang
the door. He looks tall enough.
Yeah, people still, the teachers probably smoked indoors when you were
they probably like, did.
The same rules
probably lied about your age.
Although.
The same rules don't apply. I mean, even from the 90s, things have changed.
You know, you know what my first school memory is at 4 years old?
No.
I can't say her name because she's a private citizen, but I do remember her name.
I have a feeling she was a private citizen.
Mm-hmm. Well, she might not be a private citizen anymore. Maybe I could say her name.
Yeah, she was probably, 20 years older than you, so.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, she could still be alive.
Still be alive.
Exactly.
But I do remember I'm 4 years old. I start kindergarten at Emerson School in right across the street from, down one block from Loring Park. It's right over there, 1200 Spruce Place. Right? I started school, and all of a sudden, I found out that my teacher, Ms. So-and-so...
Johnson.
Was going to take a little time off to have a baby.
Right.
Right? And that wasn't announced at first, but then I found out why they didn't announce why she was leaving at first, because Ms. blah, 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 was single.
She wasn't Mrs.
She was not Mrs.
Scandalous.
Was Ms.
Yeah.
So scandalous.
Well, so scandalous.
My very first teacher got knocked up and left the school.
I feel like half of my teachers got pregnant at some point.
Oops.
Like elementary school teachers are usually
just
younger.
Always,
and just married.
Yeah, the second grade teacher at Fawn School just left because she had a baby and decided she wanted to stay home. I'm like, yep, these things happen. Yeah, we had
these things do happen.
Mrs. Bjorkdahl.
That's life.
She had a baby
had
when we were there.
And the one before her.
Babies will change your life.
There were a lot of babies.
About it.
Christy, my sister-in-law, had three children, and she's a teacher.
Yeah.
And depending on what school you teach at, like, so I have a friend of a friend who they had to have, like, a very rushed, we have to hurry up and get married because they teach at, like, a Catholic school or something like that. And they're like, if they find out that we're having this baby before we're married, there's probably going to be some repercussions.
Like, you could get fired.
Yep.
Yikes.
Yeah, I remember I had a friend. What was her dilemma? She was very, very religious. And she was getting a job. And there was a question at Crown College. It was Crown College.
Which is a very religious school.
And she said, I don't know what to do. I feel like I have to lie to get the job.
What was the question about the job?
I can't remember. It was some sort of like
on a scale from 1 to 10, how much do you love Jesus?
She loved Jesus a lot, so that wasn't the question.
Well,
it was some stupid thing.
Do you live with a
like? Did you ever? Yeah, I don't know if it was like if you ever. Do you drink or something like something dumb?
It's like none of your business.
Catholics drink a lot.
Exactly. It was something like that, and she's like, and she was very religious, so she didn't want to lie, but she wanted the job, and I said, I can't help you with this. What am I supposed to tell you to lie?
Right.
Make
you're
you
like,
feel
lie.
Better? Oh, Catherine
lie.
Said to lie, so now it's okay. I'm like, you're going to have to figure this one out for yourself.
Well, if a heathen says you can lie, then you can say you were tricked by, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
By the devil.
And I'm sure, like, in those situations, it's like, if it's like a, do you drink? And you're like, yes, but I'm not an alcoholic, if that's what you're trying to ask. So you're like, I need to explain myself here.
Yeah. But some religions don't allow any alcohol, so... Mm-hmm.
Not a lot, though. It's basically just Islam, I think.
Baptists don't drink.
Mm-mm. I thought Jesus turned his blood to water to wine. So it shouldn't be.
That was Jesus, and that's
Jesus can do what he wants.
Yeah. But Baptist people or Jesus people?
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm Baptist, I believe. My sister-in-law grew up in a Baptist household, and there was no drinking and no dancing,
no music. Unless it was approved by the church.
I would say that must be like a white Baptist thing, because if you go to like a Southern Baptist church, there is a lot of dancing, and there's probably going to be some drinking there too.
But they were dancing for Jesus.
Okay. So you like saying Footloose style?
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, like the music they listened to had to be approved by the church. They could only go see movies that were approved by the church. I was like, this sounds like a cult.
Yes.
Southern Baptists, it seems to be like half and half.
Southern Baptists,
half of them don't drink.
I went to a Southern Baptist service for college because I was in a theology class that you had to go to 3 different religions services. Mm-hmm. And I went to a Southern Baptist one in Golden Valley, and it was so freaking fun.
Yeah.
Everyone was so nice. Yeah. I was the only white person there, and they were just like, come here, and like hugging me and dancing and singing. And I was like, okay.
And everybody's probably like in suits. Like all the women have these extravagant hats
so
on.
So fancy. I think there was a woman in a sequin gown.
Oh, my
I was
God.
Like,
I
okay.
Well.
It was so fun.
Do they have Northern Baptists?
Big fan. I know. Is that the white ones?
Northern Baptists, the white ones.
And then Eastern Baptists are Asian.
Yes, Eastern Baptists.
I don't think
they're
really.
Not a whole lot of
those. Not Asian Baptists.
What are the Western Baptists?
Western Baptists.
Cowboys?
Russian.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, Western Baptist. Yeah. What religion were cowboys? Were they Protestant?
I don't think they had.
They must have.
The country was their religion.
Probably Protestant. I would guess Protestant. Yeah.
I don't think they had a religion. Just them and their horse.
As soon as I started, I couldn't even finish because it was so ridiculous.
Last night I was reading, Fawn has this book about Leonardo da Vinci, and I was reading it, and I started to read it in an Italian accent, and then it morphed into, like, Jamaican. I was like, how did that happen?
Yama. What the hell?
It was really weird.
I get this idea for an invention.
I was like, that came
famous
out.
Famous Leonardo da Vinci quote.
It really changed over the course of a paragraph.
Accents can do that.
I know.
Fawn's just sitting there, like, very confused as to what's going on.
Oh, she was doing handstands and backbends. She wasn't even really paying attention.
That's
I was trying
Ethan
to get
now.
Her attention to come and lay down, but she was all wound up, and I was like, you got to go to sleep.
At this point, Ethan is, we're reading, and he's trying his hardest to do a somersault. He can't do it quite yet,
really?
But he's close.
His legs aren't long enough to push it
over. He can get about halfway through it, and then he'll do, like, a
flop.
Sideways
Side flop.
Turn.
Yeah.
So it's like a modified somersault.
It's a flop over at this point.
What are you doing Friday?
What time of the day?
The mid-afternoon.
I don't know why.
Well, because Andy and Melissa and Ethan are coming over, and I want to see your kids and Ethan on the bounce house.
We could come over. They have swimming
They're
lessons.
They're going to love the bounce house.
They have swimming lessons. Summer of the bounce house.
Like, how big is this bounce house? Like...
1,500 square feet.
It's like half
the size. No, I'm not saying, like, can I come over as well and jump in this
bounce house? It's like half the size of this room.
Okay, so that's a very good size bounce house.
It's a decent size. You can't be over 5 feet tall or over 100 pounds to bounce in it.
Okay, well, that's unfortunate.
So you're out of the mix.
Yeah, you can't bounce in it. I can't even bounce in it.
But I cannot wait to see that little
boy.
Yeah,
we'll come over. The kids have swimming lessons until 11 in Egan, and then we can come over.
Yeah, between Sage, Fawn, and the neighbor kids, they were mistreating that bounce house nobody's business.
Oh, yeah, they were turning it off, turning it on when they were in it, jumping over the side.
Laughing like hyenas.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I assume they just sleep extremely well after swimming lessons in bounce house. Yeah.
They have been. They both slept until like 8:40 this morning.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
And they went to bed early last night, so they were just.
They were wiped
catching
out.
Catching up on sleep.
No, that bounce house is going to be a big hit with Ethan. I'm telling you, he's going to love it.
He's going to go nuts. Yeah, he can't go in there without Fawn and Sage. Because Fawn doesn't have. She's done with school tomorrow.
Yeah, but they can't go wild with an.
They know.
He'll go flying.
He builds character.
He'll fly right out.
No, Fawn knows. Fawn is always very aware of Ethan's safety.
I'm not worried about Fawn. Sage, I am worried about.
Sage, we'll have to remind a few times.
Sage, I am definitely worried about.
We'll have to remind
Sage is one of those kids. Don't do that. He instantly does it.
Yes.
There is that.
Yeah, we have a play date in the evening, but in the afternoon we can come over.
Well, I'd be coming in the afternoon. It'd be great. All right, that's going to do it. I thought TJ was a great guest.
She was a great guest. And what? I mean, she must be a very talented writer to have all that happen with her first two books. That's amazing.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.